Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Women to Watch is an intimate look into the lives of prominent and influential women leaders from around the world and the challenges they faced on their journey. It's the real story behind her title. Join us every week to hear more stories about women from around the world and in your own communities at womentowatch.net. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco. Thanks so much for tuning in. Joining me in just a moment will be Madison Eggert Crow, and Madison is the Vice President of Political Affairs for Comcast. She has an incredible story, particularly surrounding her mom, who was a brigadier general in the Army, an experience she had when she was in college. So it's a really great conversation. Don't forget to stay with us during the breaks where you'll hear from our exclusive watch team of corporate partners. And please do subscribe to our YouTube channel at W2W Media. So now I'm very honored to welcome to the show, Madison Eggert Crow. Madison, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. And I want to say right off the top that I adore your mother. I want our audience to know that your mom, Carol Eggert, is an impressive woman and an incredibly generous one who spent a couple years with us on the show hosting a military and veterans affair segment. So she's the reason I believe we connected. So thank you to Carol.
Yeah, I adore her as well. So I echo that.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about her later in the show as well. But I just wanted to start with your background and first have you describe a little bit for me about South Coventry, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so, you know, it's in the suburbs of Philadelphia. So it's about an hour, you know, northwest of the city. It's sort of at the northern end of Chester County and, you know, just south of Pottstown. Really small little township, sort of rural in some ways, surrounded by farms, but, you know, an hour from the city. So, you know, from my perspective growing up, it was sort of the best of both worlds, right? I get to, you know, be in the middle of nowhere, roam around my neighborhood with my friends. And then still we would go into the city every once in a while to see a concert or have dinner. So it was a really nice place to grow up, really quiet and just a nice place to be sort of surrounded by, you know,
nature, right?
Nature.
I mean, yeah.
Exactly.
From what I've read, you know, first of all, you grew up in a very tight knit family, I know, and still today. And it seems as though you spent some significant time in nature, hiking and swimming, et cetera.
We did. My parents actually, you know, met doing like a survival course in the White Mountains in New Hampshire. So I think that sort of like, you know, rang true for our entire lives. Like, you know, they sort of instilled that love of nature and exploring in us as kids. So we went backpacking every Easter. We, you know, did bike vacations. We, you know, our house is in the middle of the woods. So just always outside and always enjoying nature, exploring. My mom would sort of do like orienteering exercises in our backyard to help us sort of understand how to use maps. And I mean, that's just been an incredibly helpful thing growing up, because I think, you know, I know no one else who sort of can look at a map or sort of know how to orient themselves in a city when they come up from the subway. And my mom certainly helped us do that growing up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so different. I mean, first of all, congratulations, you're a new mom.
Thank you.
A 2-month-old baby girl. So that is, I'm sure, first and foremost on your mind and in your life right now. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the world is like for your daughter, right? Compared to kids today, mine are in their late 20s and 30s. And tell me, I'd love to know your view now as a mom, how you feel about kind of the difference between how some of us grew up in nature playing, using our imagination, and now today trying as a parent to do our best to keep kids away from technology.
Yeah, it is definitely going to be hard, right? I mean, already, you know, I mean, like when I grew up, we weren't allowed to watch TV during the week, although we tried our best to get around that, you know, when my parents weren't in the house. But, and we were encouraged to be outside as much as we possibly can, and didn't have phones, didn't have social media. And I loved that. I sort of loved the way that we had to be creative to figure out what we were going to do with our time. And I thought that was so special. And I think it's just going to be so challenging raising a child now, because you're just so inundated with that kind of world, right? Even now, I mean, my baby is so young that it's, you know, not something I really have to deal with now. But even when we're watching the Phillies game and she's in the room and she starts to look at it, we're like, well, I guess we have to turn the TV off. We don't want her to sort of consume this yet. So it is going to be a challenge. And I'm hoping that I'm able to, you know, call back to my upbringing and try to encourage my daughter to enjoy the outdoors and mm-hmm. explore that way and be creative with how to use her time instead of just always sort of defaulting to a phone or, you know, a computer or whatnot. It's, you know, hard enough now, even me like having my phone in front of me when I'm with her and trying to stay present, I have to remind myself, put this down, because it's just going to, you know, she'll see that and say, oh, I guess this is what we do. This is how we interact. We just all stare at a little light box.
A screen, right? It's just constantly looking at screens. And, you know, unfortunately, toddlers are using, you know, the iPads and the phone. So it'll be interesting. And I'm sure, you know, the best thing you can do is present nature and the outdoors and physical activity. Do those things with her. And that's how she'll, you know, that's how she'll learn and know it's important. One of the things that made me laugh kind of reading, you know, some information about you was when you were little, your aspiration was to work in a tall building in the city. And I thought, my God, she's doing that. She's in one of the tallest buildings in the city of Philadelphia.
Dreams come true, right?
Dreams come true.
It's so funny when I do think back to when I was little, right? Trying to think like, what did I want to do? You know, obviously as a kid that changes all the time. And I think one time I said, like, I want to be an economic advisor. And I was probably 6 and I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't know what.
That's a big word though for a 6-year-old.
I probably had heard that somewhere and said, that sounds cool, but I didn't know what it meant. Right. But I think the theme in everything that I said I wanted to do was something like fast paced in a company where it was, you know, you watch shows and you see the, you know, the glitzy companies where everyone's working in a tall building with glass windows and, you know, sort of so shiny. And every time I thought about what I wanted to do, it was that, right? With no real sort of substance to that, because I didn't know really what it meant, but that just sounded so fun to me. And just the excitement and the fast-paced environment I just thought would be fantastic to work in.
Right. So it didn't matter what you were doing. You just needed to be in the building.
At that point in my life, I didn't know what jobs even existed. So I couldn't have possibly have known what I wanted to do.
Right. Well, I know that, you know, in high school, you started to love politics and math. And I wonder, how were you first exposed to that?
Yeah, I think in terms of politics, right, it was probably, you know, leading up to the 2004 presidential election. I was in an AP Gov course, and I think that's when I sort of started to think about politics in general, as if, you know, just even knowing that it was a thing, right? Before that, you know, my parents would vote and would talk about it, but I didn't really know what it meant to me. So I think around then in high school is when I started to think, okay, I'm interested in this. I want to know why people vote the way they do, why people like certain things, why people, you know, consume certain media, and how they, you know, become interested in, you know, a candidate or an issue. And that's how I just thought, you know, politics sounded so interesting to me. Similarly with math. I mean, that one, I have been interested in math my entire life.
You must have been good at it.
I was good at it as a kid. And I thought that that's just, you know, it's just such a fun thing to do. So, you know, eventually when I went to college, I majored in political science and I minored in math. I minored in math because I just wanted to keep a little bit of that fun for me, to do something more than just writing papers or doing something with, you know, that side of my brain. I wanted to keep the math part of my brain alive and be able to do something with logic and numbers.
Yeah. I have to laugh because math for me was so incredibly hard. And, you know, I loved everything about writing and storytelling. But Matt, you know, having a good, you know, sense of numbers is going to help you with anything that you're doing. I know that you went off to Drexel, so you decided to kind of stay in the Philadelphia area. And probably, you know, one of the biggest impacts in your life was finding out as a senior in college that your mom had been injured in Iraq serving. Mm-hmm. And my first question for you regarding that, can you take me back to receiving that call, finding out what was that like?
Yeah. So the way that, you know, it was a Saturday morning, I think, and my mom wrote to all of us and said, hey, can we all get on a family, you know, Skype call back then? And we all got on the call thinking nothing of it, right? Because that would be sort of normal. And she said, hey, all, I have to tell you about something. My vehicle was in an attack a couple of days ago. And, you know, many people in the vehicle were injured. I'm okay. But, you know, I'm still sort of shooken up. I'm still, you know, at the base where we were, where sort of the medics were. And I'll be in touch more about sort of next steps and how I'm doing and give you all more detail, but I just want to let you know that this is what happened. And then she had to go. And I just remember feeling so lost that day. Like, here it is, my mom, as a, you know, I was 22 at the time, and you know too much then, right? It's not just, you sort of know what could have happened and you know what still could happen because she's still there. And that was so disorienting to me because I didn't know what to do. I remember just not knowing what to do the rest of the day. And then from then on, just feeling just so lost and scared. And I couldn't, you know, my mom was my comfort for everything else, right? I call her when I'm sad about something, and now I'm sad about something and it's about her and I can't call her. And it was an incredibly tough time. It was just so scary and really tough being the age I was, because I think I just knew too much.
Yeah. And also I would imagine your mom, as much as I know her, she's such a warm, generous, open person, but she's tough as well. Right. So your image of her as your mother was this probably someone who would, nothing would ever happen to her, right? And yeah. Then, so how did it change your life, your perspective, or your view of life, knowing how fragile it is?
Right. I think it was my first real moment of knowing that something bad could happen, right? That, yeah. I mean, that sounds so basic, but I hadn't, you know, been faced with any sort of challenge like that before. And to know that, you know, that had happened to my mother, and she was, you know, inches away from not being here anymore. Mm. And I don't even get to hug her for another, you know, 6 months. And that it just made me, you know, realize how important family is and time with family and sacrificing to have more time with family. And I just wanted to like keep everyone close in a bubble for the rest of our lives. Like I just wanted to, okay, let's all just sort of stay together and never let anyone go anywhere else, because I don't want anyone to ever get hurt ever again. And so that was really, you know, challenging for me, because I, how do you, you know, continue to grow up and know like, okay, something bad is about to happen. I mean, many people obviously go through similar situations and, you know, they're shaken by trauma often. And I just felt so like disoriented and lost and scared. And I just wanted my, you know, one, yeah, very tough, but also very warm and loving mom to be okay and to be back with us and safe.
Yeah. When you think about her, what do you have parts of her? What reminds her in you of herself?
Yeah. So I'm incredibly similar to my mother so many ways. And I love that. I feel very lucky. I think there's this, my mom is very, she's just unique in so many ways. I mean, you know that, like she loves people, but then also doesn't care what they think about her to some extent.
Right. Right. That's awesome. Right.
Right. She's brilliant, but also incredibly humble. And I think like, I don't know how much of that I got because of genetics, but I think so much of it is just taught. Like I watched her growing up and thought, yeah, okay, I don't have to conform to what other people think I should be. Yes. I can just be okay with being, you know, kind of weird and kind of, you know, different than other people. And that's okay. And that's wonderful. And she's so unique in that way that I don't think I've ever met anyone like her. And I am lucky that I get even a piece of that, you know, for myself.
Yeah. And isn't that the greatest lesson, especially for young girls, I think, is really understanding that there's no need to look around at what everyone else is doing and mimic, that they should just, you know, be their full selves. And so you had that example.
Right.
And I would imagine you think about that now, you know, having your own daughter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think my mom and dad both together sort of defied gender roles, right? I mean, my mom didn't change her name when they got married. We all have both of my parents' last names. My dad chaperoned our Girl Scout field trips and baked for our bake sales and made us lunch every day. And then my mom, you know, was deployed to Iraq. So I think sort of seeing that, they were sort of ahead of the curve on those types of things. And to me, that was just normal. And I think like I grew up thinking that that's just normal. And I think because of that, I've been able to be sort of very comfortable in my own strength and confidence and not really, you know, not really be pressured by any sort of, you know, gender roles or pressure on how a woman should behave in any sort of setting. And I think it was my mom and my dad giving me that example of this is how it can be. You know, you don't have to conform to any sort of pressure like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. We're going to go into our first break. And when we come back, I want to talk about your work and what it's like to be in political affairs in today's world and climate and kind of how it's changed over the years. Stay with us. We're going to go into a break. You'll hear from our watch team and we'll be back with Madison Eggert Crow.
Hi, my name is Christy McCaffrey. I'm the founder and owner of Be The Good Media, and I'm here to share some good news with you. Today, I wanted to share with you about a guest that I had on my podcast named Jen Welby Gilbert. Jen is an elementary school teacher who says that she wants her students to know that they are never too young to make a difference and that they have the ability to change the world. After years of implementing her own program in her classroom to help her students understand the process and the value of giving and philanthropy, Jen went on to create her own nonprofit called The Giving Project for Children, where she's now created a curriculum that she shares with parents, teachers, and administrators to help encourage the study of philanthropy and giving in classrooms. How inspiring is that? That is some good news. To hear more of our conversation, you can visit bethegoodmedia.com. And there you'll also learn more about how Be the Good Media works to amplify impact-driven missions and causes. Again, I'm Christy McCaffrey. Listen here for more good news on Women to Watch.
Dear CEO, board director, and executive mentor to Fortune 500 executives through my work at the EXCO Group, firm of experienced CEOs, board directors, and global business leaders who offer real-world experience to help organizations and senior leaders grow. Today on Leadership Watch, we're going to talk about being in the driver's seat of your career. No matter what stage you're at in your career, you need to grasp that you are in the driver's seat. Understanding from day one that you and you alone are responsible for your career is critical. After all, why would you hand your career over to someone else to manage? There's no one as vested in yourself as you, and the ugly truth is that most managers are focused on execution rather than team development. So how can you ensure that your career stays on track? First, make sure you have a clear set of agreed upon goals that are measurable, and if priorities shift, rewrite them with buy-in. Two, if you see something that can be improved upon or automated, don't wait to be asked, just do it. This is good advice for tech-savvy millennials and Gen Zs who can help lead the way with AI. Three, don't insulate yourself. Get to know other parts of the organization.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.
In a network both internally and externally. Feel free to drive outside of your lane. And four, while your career is yours to own, don't go it alone. Identify sponsors and mentors. Also, it's important to make self-reflection and self-assessment a habit. Think through where you want to be 5 years from now and create a roadmap for yourself. Does your current path get you there? Are you passionate about what you're doing? Do you feel challenged? Are you learning? Do you feel respected? And importantly, are you a cultural fit? And is the company a cultural fit for you? If you answer negative to any of these questions, it's likely time for some course correcting. Please follow me on LinkedIn at Dawn Zier. And if you're a senior executive looking to grow in your career, check out expoleadership.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking this week with Madison Eggert Crow, and Madison is the Vice President for Political Affairs at Comcast. Big job. That's a big job. And I'm just so curious how things have evolved and changed for you in this particular field over the years, even we'll just say the past 10 years. And what's the greatest challenge for you today?
Yeah, so our role in political affairs is really around the compliance around our company's political activities. So basically, anytime a company is going to interact with government in any sort of way, like contracting or, you know, lobbying or making a political contribution, there are many, many rules and regulations. And it's our job, you know, in this centralized group to make sure that the company is complying with those rules and regulations. I think the challenge is that politics has become even more polarized in the past 10 years. And I think that, you know, one of our jobs is to raise money for an employee-funded political action committee. And there are, you know, just lots of pressures around that these days, lots of misunderstandings about what a PAC is or what a PAC does, who funds the PAC, what the PAC gives to. And I think it's just us being able to communicate and tell a story to our employees and to the public about what it is and what it does and the importance of it. I think that's been one of the biggest challenges that we've had to face.
Yeah. I'm always curious about a typical day, you know, for my guests, because they all do so many different things. So what is a typical day for you? First of all, are you hybrid? Are you able to be home or do you have to go to the office downtown?
So I go to the office downtown, 4 days a week, sometimes all 5 days a week, but you know, we're all in the office for at least 4 days a week and then working from home one. A typical day, I think what I love about my job is that there is no typical day. Every day is a little bit different, right? Because the way that we work is we're sort of an intake for everyone in the entire company to come to us to seek pre-approval to engage in certain activities. Like I want to invite, you know, XYZ official to attend a film screening because they, you know, it was filmed in their state, right? We have to look into the specific gift rules that apply to that specific official to make sure that it would actually be permissible for us to do something that's seemingly incredibly benign, right? Of course, we would want to invite someone like that to that type of event. So our typical day is just whatever happens from an intake perspective. People are coming to us day in and day out with thousands of requests each year, right, in all of these areas to say, hey, can I do this thing? And we have to think, you know, sort of think through, okay, what type of, you know, analysis do we apply here? How do we think about this? How can we make this okay? How can we adjust this to, you know, make it okay? Or how do we tell them that we can't do the thing that they want to do? So we don't have the benefit of planning too much of our days because really we're just this you know, centralized team that everyone comes to ask us permission to engage in certain activities. So it's sort of whatever happens. But outside of that, right, we're planning for raising funds for our PAC, or we're doing data analysis on prior, you know, financial reports for our political action committees, or we're doing, you know, sort of plans for trainings of employees. So there's sort of some of that planned stuff sort of interspersed into our days. But really, it's you come in here with a plan for what you think you're going to do. And most of the time it's blown up. And I think that's what I absolutely love about the job is that we can't plan any day.
Yeah, I would love that as well. I think doing anything that's just mundane, I find very difficult. One of the things I think is interesting about your journey is that you seem to have been quite strategic about what you were doing. And you had an internship with Comcast. And, you know, there was a point where you said, I'm so curious about learning, and continually learning at Comcast has made me valuable to the company. And I think, you know, that's really smart and it's such good advice. I wonder if you can talk about that for women who are listening and perhaps looking for ways to do that exact same thing.
That's right. So I had an internship here. It was sort of a co-op with Drexel. So it was a 6-month full-time, you know, work experience here at Comcast, you know, 15, 16 years ago. And I loved every minute of it. And exactly that, what I wanted to do was just learn as much as I possibly could constantly. And I don't know if at the time or even now I see that as strategic. It's just selfish in some ways because I just love it, right? Like anytime I saw a new problem or a new, responsibility for the team, I was the first to say, hey, can I learn about this? Can I learn about this and help try to figure it out for us? Can I take a stab at it even if I'm not going to be the one responsible for it? Can I get involved in some way? And I think it was that, you know, as an intern, that eagerness that made me valuable. I think I made a good impression because of that. I think someone early on, and I think it was my internship, said like one of the best things you can do is be a sponge. Just go into a job and say, I'm going to soak in as much as I possibly can about this, because that's how you become valuable, right? It's not, you can't just like pick and choose what you think you are interested in, especially in an internship, right? Get involved in as much as you possibly can, because you have no idea what's going to be interesting to you, what's going to be valuable in the future, what, you know, who you're going to meet that's going to say, oh, you were really good at that. I want you to, you know, help in us in this role. So I think that really helped in my internship. And then I finished college, went to grad school, and then came back here full time. And then I had the same attitude, right? And again, I really don't think it was strategic. I think it was strategic, you know, not strategic in the way that I thought, okay, this is going to help me move up and get promoted. It was just truly, I wanted to learn everything I possibly could, because that's what makes the job fun, right? If I can, you know, every year that I've had here at Comcast has been different than the last, because I've been able to take on new challenges constantly.
Yeah.
You know, I've been able to grow into new roles and take on new responsibilities, grow our department. And that's then led to promotions. But truly, it was because that's exactly what I wanted to do. I just wanted to constantly know more and do more and you know, help more.
Yeah. I think the greatest, most successful people, thought leaders, they all say the same thing. Stay curious, right?
Yes.
Stay curious. And I think it really is that simple in some respect, because that leads to opportunities over and over and over again.
It really does.
Yeah. Tell me, when you are having, and I'm sure now, again, a new baby and work, stress. There's stress. As much as we want to avoid it, it comes, seeps into our life. What do you do or say that helps you let go of it, you know, in the moment?
Yeah, I don't know that I have figured that out. If I have,
well, you do yoga, am I right?
I do yoga a lot.
That's yes, gotta help. That helps.
Yoga. I bike to work every day, which I think is probably my stress reliever on the way into work and my stress reliever on the way home from work for sure, because it sort of resets your brain and gets you ready for the next thing.
Yeah.
I do think that helps. I think, you know, sort of taking a step back anytime I'm stressed to say, you know, okay, what's really the worst that can happen here? Mm-hmm. And usually it's not as bad as you think, right? And yeah, okay, I could maybe not finish this project tonight. Maybe I have to finish it in the morning. I need to sort of reset. What's the worst that can happen? You're probably going to be okay. You know, that kind of thing, I think, helps me sort of reset. But I think the biking and the yoga is up top there too.
Yeah, unless it's raining. Or cold.
Oh, no, I still do it.
Oh,
I
you
still,
do?
Oh, yeah.
You're tough.
It's my mom. She got me there.
Yeah. Oh, I know. You know, listen, I know you're not in politics, but again, this environment, we're coming up on an election, and we talk on the show about just the need for women leaders in general, their input, right, their impact. And I wonder if you can just talk to, why do you think the world would be better if there were women, more women in positions of power and policy and just leadership?
Right. I think mostly, right, it's that we need people with different experiences regardless of gender, right, for sure. And we've had, there have been so many more men in leadership positions than women. So wouldn't it just be great if we had some more women to balance it out, to bring some different experiences? So it's that, And then I think it's also a, you know, women have been told they can't do things for so long, right? We're obviously getting better with that. But for so long, right, you know, it was, you know, you can't do certain jobs, or you can't, you know, sort of pressured to not work or pressured to work, or, you know, all of that pressure of being told to not do certain things, right, I think has made certain women stronger, more resilient, more more ready for that kind of position, and having the empathy to sort of lead others who might be in the same boat as them. I think that that has to be one of the most important things, right? That we need more women who have had those experiences to help lead because they've had those experiences.
Yeah. I'm so interested in your generation, which is different from my generation. It was just crazy what, you know, yeah. Not my, yeah. I was able to vote. I'm not that old, but right. You know, there's been so much change. And I wonder, when you're sitting at a table with your girlfriends and just talking about society and culture, do you feel a pressure? We got to get out there and change the world because there's so much talk surrounding that. Or is it something that you all feel ready to do? You feel like it's your time.
I think when I talk to my peers, we feel like, I mean, both men and women, right? Like we feel like it's our time, right? Like we need to get out there and help change the world, mostly because, right, we are at the age where we're in the positions of, you know, newly in positions of power, or almost at those positions of leadership and power. And I think we just know now is the time to do things to help change the world in so many different ways, right? Not just politics. It's sort of in every different function of society, we can do more to, you know, have a more equitable society, a more, you know, inclusive society. And we have the tools to do that.
Yeah. Is there something, a cause outside of work that you do that's near and dear to your heart? If you could wave a magic wand and change something, what's important to you?
I think, you know, gender equity in a way that, you know, I have to think about how to explain this. You know, how we talk about what men and women can do, right? I think there is still a lot of, especially in sort of how we raise kids, I think there's a lot of pressure on, you know, treating young girls like young girls and only giving them dolls and only giving young boys trucks to play with. And I'm thinking about this even as I'm raising a very young baby, just the types of gifts we're receiving. It's very, everything's pink, everything is a doll, everything is, you know what I mean? And yeah, I think like we do that.
I was going to say, I'm surprised only because my kids are in the same place as you. And I've seen such a change in the children that they're having that it's not all pink and blue. They're making a conscious effort. Yeah.
Yes, I do think that that's true. I think for the most part, right, I many of the people that we know when they're, you know, giving gifts or we're, you know, the things that we're buying, but there's still that little subconscious, you know, pressure or, you know, and how we, especially how we raise young boys, like not giving them dolls, but, oh, it's okay for a young girl to play with a truck, right? I think that that type of thing has always frustrated me. And I think that that's the type of thing that just sort of gets worse as they get older, right? And young boys, young girls aren't going to be given the same opportunities as they grow up if they're not, you know, given those same opportunities as young children.
Yeah. If the perception is that they can't, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
So I think the good news is I think it's going to change drastically with your generation because
it absolutely
the conversations are being had and maybe we weren't doing it right, you know?
Right.
Not limiting children.
Right.
So, but listen, I so appreciate you taking time, and I hope you'll give my best to your mom. And I wish you continued success at Comcast. I'm sure you're going to continue to grow there even higher.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
We're going to go into our last break, and I will be back to close out the show.
We are CHOP, and we can't wait to show you around. We're the nation's first children's hospital. Now, a care network with more than 50 locations that continues to expand. 3 state-of-the-art research buildings with 1.5 million square feet of space. We have grown from 12 beds 165 years ago to nearly 600 beds and one of the best children's hospitals in the world. We have a level 1 trauma center, 11 floors of patient units, more than 20 operating rooms, first-of-its-kind delivery unit for babies with birth defects, a separate cardiac operative and catheterization suite, and places to learn, like our internationally recognized simulation center. We have trained generations of leaders in the field of pediatrics. We are world leaders in medicine, surgery, and science. One of the top recipients in NIH funding for pediatric research. In this building, pioneers in CAR T therapy, mitochondrial disease, brain tumors, hyperinsulinism, and other rare diseases. Here, groundbreaking work in fetal surgery, genetics and genomics, and neurology. In our newest building, leaders in social determinants of health, clinical informatics and epidemiology, autism, trauma and injury prevention. Our patients come from every state and 115 countries. Meeting these challenges requires the best and the brightest. We are passionate about pediatrics. We are motivated to make a difference in the world and in our community. We are a team. We are CHOP.
That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thanks so much for tuning in. Next week, I'll be sitting down with Susanna Fox. And Susanna is the author of Rebel Health. And her work focuses on our healthcare system and why it needs to be much more patient-focused. Thanks, as always, to our Watch team of corporate partners for their contributions to the show. And I hope you all have a great week.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.